Global Gaming Business Podcast, the industry's first and longest-running podcast, now in our 15th year. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we sit down with Alan Feldman, the chairman, and Chris Riley, the executive director of the International Center for Responsible Gaming, and we talk about why they've delayed the 21st Conference on Gambling Addiction and put it online. The GGB podcast is brought to you by FSB, the industry's leading sports betting solutions and technology platform. For more information, visit fsbtech.com. No more roses on my way. Shake my thirst in a cool, cool pond. There's a winner in every place. There's a heart that's beating. When the National Center for Responsible Gaming was rebranded as the International Center for Responsible Gaming at the 2019 Conference on Gambling Addiction, the organization was already planning a wide-ranging event in 2020 to recognize that expanded focus. But as with all conferences and trade shows scheduled through the end of 2020 and beyond, the 21st Conference on Gambling and Addiction will exist only in cyberspace. ICRG Chairman Alan Feldman and Executive Director Chris Riley got together with me to discuss the reasons they decided to go online with the conference and how it will be presented.
Alan Feldman and Chris Riley, thanks for joining us on the podcast today. It's good to have you both here. I'd much prefer to do it in person. I've known both of you for so many years, and it's always good to catch up in person. But in this day and age, this is the way we have to handle it, I guess.
Well, thanks for having us. We appreciate the invitation.
Great. So last week you announced that the ICRG Conference on Gambling and Addiction has been canceled in person, but you're going to go through with a virtual thing. How difficult was it to make that decision?
Well, on the one hand, it was incredibly difficult. From an emotional and social point of view, it was incredibly difficult. We all look forward to getting together, and we also know that the value of these conferences is not just in the presentations. It's also in the meetings and the interactions that go on in the hallways. And so it was really difficult to finally have to acknowledge that it was the only decision we could make. I guess when you sort of break down, what were our options, I guess it became kind of an easy decision then because there were none.
Right.
The reality is that there are so many restrictions and unknowns, and we're not in a position where we can take the risk of spending the money to set up a conference and then have few people attend it. I mean, that's just not, that wouldn't be responsible on our part.
Sure, right.
So
right.
I guess it's, we hated doing it, and in all honesty, kind of put off the decision as best we could, in part because it's an ever-changing landscape.
But right.
Once we finally got to it, it was the only decision we could make.
Yeah, no question about that. So you have reimagined the conference virtually. Give us some of the details how that will work, Chris.
We'll present a series of webinars July through October on different topics on gambling and addiction. And then we're also going to have an online poster session, which will showcase new research on gambling and gambling disorder.
Okay, that's interesting. I always like the poster section of the conference. That's always very creative, I thought. So are you going to give them a little flexibility, to do things, maybe use some electronics and the video kind of stuff to do that?
Well, we're going to post them on our website, and then we're going to probably use Twitter to do dialogue with the viewers. Because the conversation is really what the poster session is all about,
right?
Asking questions of the presenter and so on. So we think we're going to use Twitter or Facebook, but we're still working on that right now.
I'm sorry, if I could just jump in. No, that's all right. If I could just jump in on the poster session. I think there are a lot of folks in the industry who don't necessarily understand what these are. These are young researchers who are working on projects. It may not be a full-blown research program as much as it is an area of investigation. But the thing that's fascinating, if you're in the industry, there are a lot of topics that these folks are working on that are absolutely germane to the here and now of what discussions are going on in boardrooms and offices across the industry. And so for those in the industry, I would tell you, even though I appreciate that the webinars feel like the main part of the program, these poster sessions could be absolutely fascinating. And in some cases, can provide some real insight and data into the questions of the day.
Great. Yeah, as I said, when I've been, of course, I've been to almost every one of the conferences. That's always one of my favorite parts because it does really spark that dialogue that I think is really important to have.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So, is there any charge for these sessions?
No, it's free. Thanks to the generosity of Global Gaming Expo, Reed Exhibitions, and AGA.
Great. So, as I said, I've been to almost every one of these conferences, and you have such a wide variety of topics, but you kind of had to boil it down to four or five topics. How did you do that? What were the criteria for the topics you chose?
Well, we always try to look at gambling in the context of addiction in general, and so we have some topics that are not specifically on gambling, but that look at related, like substance abuse and depression and so on. And so we had several topics are specifically on like strategies for addressing needs of family members of disordered gamblers.
Mm-hmm.
That was yesterday, and that's a very clinical, that was a very clinical approach. And then we also have, we're going to look at how they adapt, Native Americans can adapt treatment protocols for their culture,
mm-hmm.
For substance abuse and for gambling. And then we also have one on stigma and how that's promoted by the diagnostic criteria. And we're also going to, for Responsible Gaming Week, we're going to have a session on analyzing where the money goes at the state level for gambling treatment and responsible gaming. And finally, we're going to do in October, the last one will be on mindfulness as a way to prevent relapse among disordered gamblers.
You know, this pandemic has really been challenging for all organizations, particularly an organization like yours, which is dependent upon contributions and things of that nature. So what has it meant, you know, for the ICRG, you know, both financially and really spiritually?
Well, I think we're affected in much the same way as many nonprofits. It's a big financial hit, not only because our major source of funding has been shut down globally. And so it's very difficult to turn to them again this year and say, you know, can you renew? Can you, you know, make your annual pledge payment? It's obviously a very, very difficult situation across the gaming industry generally. We have a slightly unique problem in that we're also affected by the fact that our commitments are over multiple years. When we make research commitments, they're very, very rarely just 1 year. They tend to be out over 2, 3, sometimes even more, 5 years.
Sure.
Because research has to be done over a period of time. Although we have a little bit of a, you know, you might say a cushion, we really don't, because those monies have been committed to researchers over a period of time.
Right.
So not only are we dealing with how we can continue to manage day to day today, we're also looking out a couple of years and seeing impacts that might affect the research that's underway today and whether or not we're going to be able to see it all the way through. So it's a multi-level bit of a problem. We continue to try to manage as best we can. The other piece of it that's sort of interesting is the lack of ability to travel, the lack of ability to have events like G2E. This is an area where we used to be able to have meetings with prospective donors. So we really have been kind of cut off from our donor base, other than those that we know, that we have relationships with. But there are new players every day, and especially as we get more into online gaming, as we get more into cashless payment systems, sports betting, there are new players coming in all the time, and it's very difficult to establish relationships with some of these new entities when you can't actually meet them.
Sure, right.
Yeah. So it's been a lot to try to work through, and you know, the ICRG isn't exactly a large organization. I serve as chair of the board. I'm a volunteer. There's Chris and Russell and Lisa, and that's about it. I think I've just named the entire staff. And you know, just trying to manage normal day-to-day operations. Their plates are already full. So you add some of these dynamics into it, and it's been a lot to handle.
Sure. Well, I guess there's some dynamics also on the researcher side with the way universities have been shut down as well.
Yeah, a lot of the labs that study gambling disorder have been shut down, and so there'll be a delay in a lot of the research that we're funding.
FSB is more than just a platform. With more than 100,000 live sporting events traded by FSB teams each year, FSB has the experience to help you launch the most exciting U.S. sports betting operation. Built by experts with years of experience and powering some of the world's most successful brands, the FSB platform has been created to put you in charge of your business. FSB helps by creating online and retail solutions that are supported by an incredibly strong mobile offering with marketing, trading, payments, and all the other tools required to support a world-leading sports book. The FSB team is good, but their technology is great. And now back to our podcast.
Another one of the fallout from this pandemic has been here in Nevada, where Governor Sisolak has cut funding for problem gambling in order to cut spending and you know reduce the losses that the state's enduring right now. What does that mean for the problem gambling community in Nevada?
Well, I don't know that it's right to sort of lay this all at the governor's feet. It is the governor's budget, and it is ultimately the one that he presents to the legislature. But obviously, it's put together by his department heads, and that means the Department of Health and Human Services. And their proposal was clearly extremely troubling. They were talking about an almost 80% cut to problem gambling services in the state. We already don't spend an inordinate amount of money in this space here in Nevada. It's $2 million a year that's been appropriated by the legislature. So to cut that back to something around $450,000 is incredibly dramatic. I am hopeful. We're working with the legislature now, trying to find ways that we might be able to rehabilitate that number. It's certainly not going to get to 2 million, and frankly, nor should it. I mean, every single line item in the state budget has been affected by the economic hit that the Nevada has taken. But hopefully, we can get it to something a little bit more reasonable than $400,000, and at the very least, continue to be able to provide treatment for those who are in need, who have no other source. They're not able to bill Medicare. They're not able to bill private insurance. They really have nowhere else to turn.
Sure, yeah.
And that's really the critical issue.
You would think with casinos across the country being closed for the last 3 or 4 months, that was kind of good news for the problem gambler. But, of course, they always find places to gamble, either legal or illegal. Was that the case during the shutdown?
To know really or to do any research on it, so it's really hard to say. I think just speculating, it could go either way. Some might have led some to see that they can abstain and recover from gambling disorder during this period, or others might be under a lot of stress because of finances and so on, and just found another form of gambling, either legal or illegal, or online, or even day trading. So we'll know eventually when the research is done. We'll have a better sense of the impact.
I totally agree with Chris. I think that it is too soon to tell empirically. We can't give you numbers, but I suspect that it's everything that Chris just said. I think for some people, clearly, the attraction and the draw of a casino, of going to a live environment with the energy and the excitement, that's not there. They can't go. So they're taking a break. And you can see that a little bit in some of the dialogue. I participate in several Facebook groups with gambling addicts, and you can see that in some of the dialogue. At the same time, there is concern, and there ought to be, that this is an opportunity to now transition to internet gambling, to illegal gambling, at home locally or online, or other forms of gambling, as Chris mentioned. Day trading is probably the most ubiquitous.
Sure.
There is also the simple fact that there is all kinds of economic pressure going on, people losing jobs, losing insurance. If we're already experiencing harms from gambling, financial harms, that certainly can't have improved in the last 4 months. And if you've made a decision that gambling is the way to get you through that, now you're compounding the problem.
Right, right.
So I know here in Nevada, we've been messaging to that effect. There's a campaign that's been initiated in the last. It actually just got underway, ironically enough, at the very beginning of March, called Project Worth. And the messaging around that is, don't think that this is a time to fix your problems with gambling. Pay attention to it, not only for yourself, but for your loved ones, for your family, for your friends, et cetera.
Sure.
Know your worth.
Right.
And I'm hopeful that that kind of messaging is seeing its way through a number of states. But ultimately, as Chris said, it's too early to be specific as to what's going on.
There's been a new effort, not a new effort, but an ongoing effort from the AGA and AGM to really cut illegal gambling. We've seen these, gray area machines in various states just continuing to operate during this pandemic. The offshore sports books are still operating and thriving in some places, basically because the legal sports books aren't able to match their prices and their customer service, frankly. So is this something that being researched that to talk about how much this is impacting problem gamblers, is illegal gambling?
I don't think there's any research that I'm aware of that really looks at that, which would be fascinating. I wish somebody would look at
it. Yeah, yes. It would be well worth it. I'm unaware of research specifically about that. I think that there's plenty of reason to be concerned. I don't know that these sites, target problem gamblers, because I don't know that they have any greater ability to identify problem gamblers than anyone else. One thing is for certain, however, is they're not doing anything to make any attempt to identify anyone who seems to be exhibiting problematic play. So they're certainly not doing anything to protect their customers.
Yeah.
And that should be of concern.
Sure, no question.
But that would be a fascinating thing to do, to take a look at the relationship between problem gamblers and illegal sites.
Yeah. I went to a conference, and I believe you were there, Alan, in January at UNLV about artificial intelligence, and I was really surprised to see how much technology there is out there to identify and help problem gamblers, both to help them and to identify them. Is there more technology out there that's coming on that really is important to identify a problem gambler?
I think it's a little too early to tell if any of this actually works.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the technology that's out there is able to identify patterns. And if, in fact, we can identify patterns that are consistent with problem gambling, then maybe, yes, we will be able to identify problem gamblers. I'm not certain, you know, the patterns that we're talking about aren't behavioral analysis patterns. They're patterns of behavior, but not psychological behavior.
Right.
So it's a little hard to tell how effective these will ultimately prove to be. I think they're fascinating. I think we absolutely ought to continue to explore this. I'm sort of trying to set expectations here about, you know, the reality of what I think we can come up with.
Sure.
I think the technology absolutely can tell us where there's an aberration in behavior, and we need to understand what's caused that.
Right.
And that's not a bad thing at all, but it may have nothing to do with problem gambling.
Right.
Yeah, I think the online gambling, where they have algorithms that can, what they're trying to do is develop algorithms so they can detect patterns. And then if the person exhibits those behaviors, they can send them a responsible gaming message.
Sure.
Or encourage them to self-exclude. That's the only technology that I'm aware of.
Okay.
Or that's the only effort to do that. But they're not there yet. They're still working on that.
Sure, of course. We just did a cover story on cashless transactions in the industry about how that's really becoming a technology that is moving forward very quickly. And, of course, with the COVID-19 and the contactless transactions that are being recommended for that, it really makes sense. But, you know, it sounds like it's bad news for problem gamblers, but can it actually help to minimize the problem?
Well, I don't think that cashless systems on their face are bad news. I think it's all in the implementation. The cashless systems also bring some really remarkable tools with them, and in my view, it's a matter of what and how those tools get implemented in order to know whether or not jurisdictions and companies are taking advantage of the protections that they could actually provide, and this could actually get much better. So let me give you one example. It's probably, again, need to prove this out, but it's probably or even potentially likely that an analysis of declined transactions may lead you to a better understanding as to whether or not someone has a problem. And if there's a pattern of declined transactions, that might be someone you want to take a look at, have a discussion with, and get to know better in terms of whether or not there may be an issue. So now the question is, who has that information? Does the declined transaction information rest with the financial institution, rest with the card provider, rest with the casino? Who has access to it? And therefore, who can take action on it? And it isn't actually clear. And it may depend upon how that system gets implemented in order to understand how that's going to actually manifest itself in a real environment. Another example could be simply time of day or time of transaction. Maybe it's true and maybe it isn't, but someone who is seeking to transact, refunding their accounts at 2 a.m. on a Wednesday morning is a different kind of player than someone who's doing it at 2 p.m. on a Saturday.
Right.
That also, by the way, may not be true. We could be talking about a shift worker.
Sure.
Who's just gotten off work, and that's mm-hmm. their time to have, you know, some free time. That's
right.
Okay, too.
Yep.
But the point is that we're going to now have access to some of this information. The question is, who has access to it, and what do they do with it?
Right.
So I think that the cashless systems actually offer some really interesting potential if it's deployed properly.
Well, I want to wrap this up. Let's get back to the conference a little bit. Chris, what kind of reaction have you gotten from attendees in the past? Are they good with this decision at this point?
Yes. A lot of them said they missed the food because the food is so good at Sands.
Right.
But they understand, and I think they're happy to not be traveling and have some. We have some good programs planned. So I think that overall the reception has been very positive.
Uh-huh. But I agree with what Alan said earlier. You know, a lot of the value of the conference are the people you meet in the hallway and then, you know, catching up and having discussions about the research. So, you know, that's obviously going to be missed.
That's going to be hard that's going to be hard to do digitally. So we could look at having a Facebook chat or something like that.
Sure.
For people to respond further to the webinars that we're doing, so we're going to look at that. But it's not the same, obviously,
and
we wouldn't pretend otherwise.
Right.
Well, you know, one thing we might look into, just spitballing here, for anyone who's in Las Vegas, maybe you could Postmates lunch from the Sands. At least be able to get the food that way.
Yeah.
For sure, that would be great. Well, so the plans for the 2021, I know that's a long way off now, but we're all keeping our fingers crossed that we'll be semi back to normal then, be able to gather and exchange ideas and discussions at that point.
Yeah, we're optimistic. I've got some great topics that I didn't get to use this year, so
sure,
we're ahead of the game there.
Yep.
So we're looking forward to it.
Great. The ICRJ is such an important organization to the gaming industry, and I really appreciate the work you guys have been putting into this, and we're going to do everything we can to get the word out so that you know, people understand the research that is being done and that needs to be done, and whatever you guys need from us, we'll be here for you.
Thank you. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Roger. We really do appreciate it, and we appreciate you.
Shaking my fist in a cool, cool palm. Cooper told Molly the whole block's gone. They're down for jewelry, money, and clothes. I always get out of the trouble I'm in.
Hope you enjoyed the special edition of this week's podcast brought to you by FSB, the industry's leading sports betting solutions and technology platform. For more information, visit fsbtech.com. To learn more about responsible gaming and how the industry is committing time and resources, visit ggbmagazine.com. And to get all the news of the gaming industry, particularly of the coronavirus situation and its impact on gaming, including daily updates, subscribe for free at ggbnews.com by using the code GGB180. And don't miss a single edition of the podcast. Subscribe on iTunes and Spotify today. And we'll see you next time on the GGB Podcast.
Bottle of